Welcome to the Silver Screen Podcast. I'm Jared Boomer.
And I'm Katie Ganey-West. This is a podcast about movies and pop culture.
And today we are reviewing a movie that is celebrating its 20th anniversary this year, and that is Signs, directed by M. Night Shyamalan. This came out in August of 2002, so it's just a little past the exact 20-year anniversary of this movie, but this is a classic. There's tons of horror and thriller movies that come out nowadays that have, you know, things based on the movie Signs or use that as inspiration, so we figured we would talk about this one this week on the podcast. And it's a movie we've both seen before, but I hadn't watched it in a while until this past week when I rewatched it for the show. So,
Jared, I was thrilled when you suggested this. Like, because we had talked about, because we knew it was like kind of slow movie season. This happens every year. And we were kind of thinking about, we had a couple, I won't say what they are, because there's still a couple that recommendations that I love that we might do that are kind of like coming up on 20 years or 25. But anyway, this, Jared threw this out and I was like, yes, let's do that. And also, Jared, you don't know this because you're not in my brain, but you know how you can get earworms and it's like this, some song just plays over and over.
Yeah. Yep.
For the, about the last hour, I would say, including now, I can hear the theme Two Signs going through my head, which I love the music. That's one of my likes. But I do wish it would stop a little bit because I want to be able to focus. And I'm like, please, yeah, another song.
You're going out in your backyard and you're like, is there a crop circle back here?
Yeah.
I don't know.
There is. No, okay.
You might have a bigger issue on your hands then, yeah.
Yeah, but this was a great suggestion, so thank you. And I hope other people are excited about it too. But this movie, like, slapped, as the kids would say. I thought this movie was amazing when it came out, but dang, it still holds up today. And I don't think I'd seen it, just like you, I don't think I'd watched it for about 10 years.
Yeah, it had been a while for me. So we'll talk about Signs today. We do have a decent amount of news to get through, though, before we get to our review of Signs. The biggest story probably is that Leonardo DiCaprio and his girlfriend, Camilla Morrone, have broken up after 4 years together. He's 47. She's 25. My joke I made to Katie earlier was that she outaged him, so he's got to get a younger model.
That's what, yeah. That's what everyone's been saying, because he doesn't go past age 25. And it just, I don't even find this very funny. I'm really bothered. Like, I used to think it was funny. And then he keeps saying, you know, like, that's not true. That's not something I do. And I'm like, but you keep doing it. Like, mm-hmm. You very specifically keep doing it.
And it's like he knows that because he's Leonardo DiCaprio, he can get younger women DiCaprio. So I feel like he's saying he's not breaking up with them because they're getting older. But like you said, I feel like that's exactly why he's breaking up with them.
Mm-hmm. And they're all pretty, but there's a lot of pretty women that are 26, 27, even 30. And I really like Leo. I mean, I think Leo is one of the best actors around, and I've thought that consistently for years, but I'm so disgusted by this that I'm not even attracted to him. And also, I don't like that he smokes. The smoking is disgusting to me. I don't know if he still is like a chain smoker, but I know at one time it was definitely that bad, but I think he still smokes, and that is such a turnoff for me.
And this isn't, I mean, this is still like a wide age gap now, but like in 15 years when he's like 60 and he's dating 20-year-olds, that's going to be even, I mean, he's almost 50. So.
Well, and I think one of these days someone's going to get pregnant too. Like I really, I think at some point. And then also I heard that he met her. Okay. So she is, I do forget the source. I apologize. She is Al Pacino's goddaughter, I think.
Okay.
Or he dated, or wait, that could be wrong. So maybe we do need to fact check this. Or I know that Al Pacino, I think this is it. Al Pacino dated her mom for a really long time and introduced Leo to her. But I think she was 8 when he met her.
Oh, wow. Okay. So.
Yeah. So gross.
Not very
maybe
old,
she was
yeah.
15. You know what? Let me just look it up while you say something, but I know that she was so young that I almost threw up.
Okay, yeah. She was 20 when they first started dating and Leo would have been 43.
Right.
Camilla, and she's a model, obviously, because that's what Leo dates. So
yeah,
I don't know about the connection with Al Pacino though.
Yes.
I'm not sure.
Okay, this might be it.
Okay.
This is on ET, which might have, sorry, ET.com, ET Online. Okay. So, yeah. And I'd also read they were together 5 years, but consistently these articles are saying four. So, anyway. Okay. Yes. Her mom was romantically linked to Al Pacino. I don't think this was the article that said it. I'll find it. While we're talking today, I will find it. But I need to know the age she was when he met her, because I was like, that is disgusting. I don't think he did anything to her, but I'm like, that's still really gross and hard for me to get over.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
Some other news. Netflix revealed some of their winter slate, their Oscar-y Academy Awards type movies that they'll be releasing. There was two that caught my eye. One is by Alejandro Iñárritu, who did Birdman. He has a new movie coming out called Bardo, False Chronicle of a Handful of Truths. Now, I don't know any of the actors that are in this movie because it's not in the English language. It doesn't appear that it's going to be. So I'm unfamiliar with the actors in this film. But obviously anything that he does is going to be interesting to check out after Birdman and, you know, him winning the Oscar for that. So, and then the other movie is called The Pale Blue Eye. This is also going to be on Netflix. It's starring Christian Bale, and it follows a detective with his young cadet named Edgar Allan Poe, and they're investigating a series of murders in 1830. Ooh. So it comes out in theaters on December 23rd and then on Netflix January 6th. So,
oh my, okay, cool.
That looks like it could have some awardsy buzz for sure, especially because of the topic and Christian Bale. Obviously, it looks interesting, so I think that could possibly be good. So, and then there's also that new movie that's directed by Noah Baumbach that stars Greta Gerwig and Adam Driver. Mm-hmm. I forget the name of that one though.
I do too, but I just read something about that the other day.
I'm gonna look it up here. So. To see what that
I found my thing. So this is on cosmopolitan.com. I did not read it on this, and I also feel like this doesn't sound exact, so take it with a grain of salt. But Camila made her entrance to the world in 1997. And then it says she was about 12 years old, and her former stepdad, Al Pacino, introduced the two.
Okay.
And then it said, do with that cringe information what you will. Yeah. Yeah. And then it says he was with Nina Agdal, who's now dating that loser. Luke Paul. Luke Bryan. Luke Paul. Luke Paul.
Okay.
Logan Paul.
Logan Paul. Logan Paul. Yeah.
Sorry. Wow. Edit that, but not really. He was dating Nina Agdal, and then they broke up. And then it says he dated her a couple of days before Cannes 2017. This is where Camila was 19 at the time. She came, attended the festival, and they started dating officially 6 months later.
Okay. That's the Leo dating news. So also that Noah Baumbach movie is called White Noise, that stars Adam Driver and Greta Gerwig. It will be on Netflix December 30th. So.
Okay. Cool.
Right near the end of the year. So another awardsy type one to watch out for, again, with that release date. It seems like Netflix is kind of thinking that it might have some Oscar buzz, and everybody involved in that obviously has Oscar, you know,
yes,
have Oscar wins and nominations. So, yeah. Yes. Okay. Only other news thing we have is that Jordan Peele did a New York Times interview and maybe hinted at a sequel for Nope. He said there's still more of that story to tell. And he said, I do think fans will get more answers on some of these things in the future. We're not over telling all of these stories. So we'll see if we get a Nope sequel. Obviously, Nope is... definitely draw some inspiration from Signs, I think. So it's relevant to talk about on this episode. So, and Nope was, we both like Nope. We have an episode on Nope that came out a few weeks ago, if you want to listen to that. So,
yep.
But it appears there might be a sequel in the works. So, or something that he's not ruled out, you know, down the road, maybe not the next movie he does, but maybe a movie or two later, he might return to that. Nope.
And
the
if
Nope
you
cast,
are
so.
Interested in the Nope episode, it was episode 157. So just a couple before this.
Nice. So that's all of our news. We don't have any corrections today, and we'll get into our thoughts now on Signs, again, celebrating its 20th anniversary, released on August 2nd of 2002. Rated PG-13 for some frightening moments. It's an hour and 46 minutes, and then IMDb is a 6.8 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes, critics 75%, audience 67%. So... not super highly rated. I don't know. I think my overall score will be a little bit higher than that. Because I think a 67, especially for the audience score, is kind of low for this.
I really like this movie. I know I said that, but like, I definitely think it's much higher than a 67, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would think so. I would think so too. So, yeah. Yes. So Signs obviously were released in 2002, and my tabs have froze up here. So there we go. Back to the notes now. Box office wise, it made $227 million and then worldwide $408 million. So very high grossing movie for, especially by 2002 standards, made almost $500 million, which is a lot for a horror slash thriller movie. Synopsis is a widowed former reverend living with his children and brother on a Pennsylvania farm find mysterious crop circles in their fields, which suggests something more frightening to come. Do you think this movie too did well because it was 2002 and while people had the internet, they weren't on it as much. So they didn't, maybe there was more, I feel like those type of movies, thriller and horror movies before that, the time where you could just look everything up did better just because there was more intrigue and like you actually had to go to the theater to kind of figure out what the story was. You could, I mean, granted, the internet was definitely around in 2002, but not as many people were using it. It wasn't on our phones yet or anything. So you couldn't just like look up the plot of Signs if you were out somewhere. I feel like that maybe helped this movie because people just had to kind of go see it to figure out what it was about.
That's a really good point. I didn't even consider. I am also thinking though, like I do think there has always been a group of people that are really interested in UFOs and aliens and extraterrestrial life and all that. And when you think about 20 years ago, I mean, think about the difference in like, we didn't have these high-tech photos that we're now getting that are showing different planets and like distinct detailed information. Like we didn't have any of that. The movie The Martian hadn't come out. Gravity hadn't come out. First Man. There's so many movies that we now have about like more that we know about other life out there, but I don't think we had nearly the amount of information or technology we have now. So I could see people just being interested from that perspective too.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. So some critics reviews for this movie. First, we have Moira McDonald of the Seattle Times, who says it's a smart, skillful movie from a writer director who's only 31 years old, but already a master of blending the chills of fright with the warmth of love. Obviously, talking about M. Night Shyamalan, still directing movies today. He's in his early 50s now. And I would say that, unfortunately, his career has gone downhill. We'll talk about him more in a little bit. But his best movies, I think, are definitely the ones that were earlier in his career. So next up is Eric Harrison of the Houston Chronicle, who says, a heartfelt movie that deals more nakedly with Shyamalan's core concerns than any of his other Hollywood films. And it doubtlessly will deeply touch many people as well as frighten them. And then finally, we have Roger Ebert of the Chicago Sun-Times, who says, the work of a born filmmaker able to summon apprehension out of thin air. So
I was just excited
this, of course,
to see
is directed
a quote.
By, oh, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I was just excited to see a quote from Roger Ebert because I miss him. And he was such a respected movie critic and stuff. And I just thought, oh my gosh, he was still alive then. But yeah, so I wanted to throw him in there.
And he did. It sounds like from that quote, he did enjoy this movie as well.
Yeah.
So this is directed, of course, by M. Night Shyamalan, who is an Indian director, writer, and producer. He's done a ton of movies, including The Sixth Sense, Unbreakable, Signs, The Village, The Happening, Split, Glass, and his most recent movie, Old. He was nominated for a Best Director Oscar and Best Original Screenplay for The Sixth Sense in 2000, of course, starring Bruce Willis and Haley Joel Osment. And next up, he's directing Knock at the Cabin and Labor of Love. So interested to see what those are about.
Yeah.
I saw Old in theaters. It was okay. It wasn't great. That would be my quick review of that movie.
I did not see it because I suspected. Yeah, I thought that would kind of be the review, but I wasn't sure.
Yes. So we will take a quick break here on the show. We'll come back. We'll talk about the cast and our likes and dislikes for Signs. And we're back here on the show talking about Signs, released in 2002, celebrating its 20th anniversary this year. This movie has a pretty small cast. It's following basically one family, and that family is led by Mel Gibson.
Yes, thank you, Jared. Mel Gibson, he is problematic, that I have more to say on that. But at the time, let's just go back 20 years before he did everything that he is known for today. He plays Graham Hess. Mel Gibson is originally from New York and is best known for Braveheart, the Lethal Weapon franchise, Conspiracy Theory, Ransom, What Women Want, and voicing John Smith in Disney's Pocahontas. Don't you ever forget it. And he has been nominated for 3 Oscars, including Best Director for Hacksaw Ridge in 2017. And in 1996, he won for Best Picture and Best Director for Braveheart. He has a lot of upcoming projects. I was surprised by that. But they include Lethal Weapon 5, Informant, and Boys of Summer. So you'll definitely see him again, and people are still hiring him.
Yeah, I think he's trying to continue the like Lethal Weapon franchise. Like Tom Cruise is doing Mission Impossible. It's just that Tom Cruise has so much more like bankable star power than Mel Gibson at this point. And
but
those movies are good, but yeah.
But he's an idiot too. I kind of like, yeah. I hate them, but I hate that these men just do whatever they want, including not even assault and stuff, like things like being racist and bigots and like anti-Semitic, and they still get jobs. I don't understand. Mm-hmm. Anyway, trigger for me, clearly. But he is, I will say, fantastic in this film. So if I'm basing just what I think of him on this film and this performance, great job. Moving on, let's go to Joaquin Phoenix. He plays Merrill Hess. He is Mel's brother in the film. He is also very good looking in this film. Like, I didn't do a crush alert because I don't feel that way about Joaquin, but he looked way different 20 years ago. Anyway, Joaquin was originally born in Puerto Rico and is best known for Her, Gladiator, The Master, Walk the Line, and Joker. He's been nominated for 4 acting Oscars already for Gladiator, Walk the Line, The Master, and Joker. In 2020, he won a Best Actor Oscar for The Joker. Next up, he will play Napoleon in a movie called Napoleon Bonaparte, and he will reprise the Joker role in Joker Folie à Deux.
Yeah.
Which we are excited about.
Another Joker movie coming. Lady Gaga is going to be in that too. Very highly anticipated. So.
Yes. And lastly, we have Rory Culkin. I will sidebar here and just say, Jared and I laughed about this because I was telling him the other day, I watched this whole movie and I kept saying, oh my gosh, I love him in Succession. He is the best person on Succession. And then I looked up when he was born. He was born in 89. And I was like, oh my gosh, we were born like almost the same year. Like we're the same age now. And then I realized the whole time, nope, Rory, I just saw in the show Under the Banner of Heaven. He is not his brother, Kieran, who is in the show Succession. So just to clear that up, Rory Culkin and I do happen to be the same age, and he is not in Succession. He plays Morgan Hess in this movie, which was fun when I found out we were the same age. It was crazy to watch him in this film and know that I was that age when this movie came out. He is the youngest son of the Culkin family, also known for Mean Creek, You Can Count on Me, Scream 4, and the TV series both Waco and Under the Banner of Heaven, which is the one with Andrew Garfield on Hulu right now. Next up, you can see him in A Worthy Man. And then there is an all-star cast too. We've said that. I feel like I say that about every film, but this movie was astonishing to me because there's so many people in it that at the time you might have known them 20 years ago, but you definitely know these actors now. So we've already mentioned some of them, but this film is also starring Abigail Breslin, Cherry Jones, Ted Sutton, Merritt Weaver, Patricia Callenber, and M. Night Shyamalan also has a bit performance in the film.
Yeah, which is customary in all his movies. He's usually got a cameo performance in there somewhere.
Yes.
So, okay, we'll get into our likes and thoughts now on Signs. First up, the music is iconic for this movie. The score is done by James Newton Howard, and the theme for this movie is super synonymous with the film. One of the more recognizable themes, I think, of the last 20 years. As soon as it starts, gets you in the mood. They play it. They have opening credits for this movie, which is, you know, rare nowadays in 2022,
right.
But 2002, still doing opening credits a lot. So the movie starts, there's opening credits, and that theme is playing underneath those. It really just sets the tone for the movie and lets you know that this is going to be kind of a tense experience going forward.
Yes. And the opening credits, that's another like I want to call out. I really liked the choice to have opening credits and have this theme play by James Newton Howard because it is so good. And first you hear like, I want to say it's a violin. I'm not good enough to exactly tell you that's a violin. But it's like when you hear an orchestra, they're first doing like warming up. We used to do this in orchestra. And it's just a beautiful sound to hear people kind of like checking, you know, the resin on their bows and how do the strings sound? Do they need to be tuned? And then it gets like the music really builds and then it stops. And then it's very quiet in the opening scene or whatever. You're on a farm and all you can hear is like, you know, the rustling of leaves and it's pretty quiet. You hear kids laughing, whatever. So I thought that was good too, because even at the very beginning, you have no idea what's happening, but it builds tension with the music and then it just stops. What a great beginning to a film. But the music is fantastic. Jared's right too. It's like, it is a memorable score and it's beautifully done. It's, I don't think there was a bad timing or bad like theme throughout the movie with the music along with what was actually happening, the action in the film.
So another like is the actors are great in this movie. It's got a really good cast. Obviously, the two leads, Mel Gibson and Joaquin Phoenix, are fantastic. But you've also got Abigail Breslin, who I think does an excellent job, and she's very young in this movie. You've got Cherry Jones, who went on to play, like, you know, she was on the show 24 for many, many years, and she's done a lot of other acting jobs as well. But she's in this movie kind of as a supporting role. She's probably about 15 minutes of the movie. So. But yeah, this cast is really solid for this film.
Yes, definitely agree. I kind of already touched on that, but it was just remarkable to see these people because I don't think any of them look old now. I don't even think Mel Gibson, Joaquin, I don't think any of them look old, but it is crazy to see what they looked like 20 years ago because no matter what we do, procedures, sunblock, whatever, you know, we age over time and just look different. And it was just crazy to see people then. And especially like I was saying about Rory, it was weird to watch children in this film that look so young and so tiny and so cute. And to know that I was that age when I saw it, because I think I was allowed to see this film around the time it came out.
Okay. Yeah. You would have been like 13, right?
Yeah.
13,
yeah.
14.
Well,
yeah.
Was he 13? I kind of want to know how old he, well, actually I could just do the math, but I'm not good at math. But if it was 2002, if they filmed it around that time. Yeah. But anyway, I just thought that was really strange to see, like, as an adult woman looking at these children being like, oh, they're so tiny. And then thinking, oh, I was that tiny when I watched it. But it was cute. But the cast is terrific. And also, didn't you think, Jared, that Mel Gibson and Joaquin, and they all actually looked like they could be a family. I don't know that they have.
Yeah.
I wouldn't look at like their, I don't know specifics, like their noses look the same or anything, but it's believable that these people are all related.
Yeah. Yep. I think they really fit together as a unit very well. And that kind of leads us into the next like, which that this is an emotional movie and very poignant as well. So obviously we're going to get into spoilers here. This movie came out 20 years ago. If you haven't seen it, watch it, come back, but I'm not, spoiler warning is not going to be as intense as, you know, some newer movies, but anyway, you find out early in the film, Mel Gibson's wife has died. She unfortunately was walking and then a car hit her and she is no longer with us. So it's just Mel Gibson, the two kids, and then Meryl, who is, you know, Joaquin's character. That's his brother. But I think throughout the movie, Mel Gibson is kind of struggling with that death. He's also a reverend. So he's kind of evaluating that in his life as well, like his faith and how does that play into things? And so all of that is kind of a side story to the alien crop circle story that's going on. But I think that adds like a lot of depth to his character that you don't normally see in like a thriller movie.
No, totally agree, Jared. I think part of the reason this movie does rank so highly for me and was so memorable at the time and still carries that weight is because these are very, other than aliens, the things that this family go through, these are very relatable situations. A lot of people like Meryl in the film have a dream to grow up and get famous and do whatever. They're really good at a sport or something, and then life takes them in another direction. Or a family member dies and someone moves in to take care of them. Or like even a parent dying, it's awful that it happens, but it does happen to most people, but there are people who do tragically die young, and people getting hit by cars is not all that uncommon. So it was just like the things that happen, you can't help but think, man, I wonder if this happened to me other than a crop circle in your backyard and aliens. The rest of it's very relatable. And I think they all did such a beautiful job. And I absolutely love the element of him being a former father, like in a Catholic church, and then losing his religion. He's mad at God throughout this whole film because he's like, you took my wife from me. Mm-hmm. My kids don't have their mom. I don't believe in you anymore. I hate you. And then all these, I love the name Signs for the film too, because he has that famous scene that this did make me cry when I was watching it this time through, where he's talking to Meryl and he's like, are you the kind of person that believes in coincidence? Or are you the person that sees signs, sees miracles and believes that's what they are? I will say I'm the latter. I'm definitely the one that thinks there's miracles and sees signs. And in the end, I do think that's kind of where M. Night Shyamalan is leading you to believe, because things like the daughter not liking the water, things like Meryl being really good at baseball and he has to swing away. I mean, I just think this film is like really beautifully done and oddly emotional. Like it's, and I agree with you, Jared, like that's not something we normally get in thrillers, which is, I think, what made it such a standout film for me.
Another like for this movie is the aliens are definitely creepy in this movie. They look really good for being 2002, and obviously CGI has advanced a ton since then, but they still look good for being there in 2002. M. Night Shyamalan does some very good like jump scare camera tricks with them, where, you know, you'll the walk by, like the one I think of is the TV scene where they're like rolling the TV in and you see the alien in the reflection of the TV when Mel Gibson moves it into the living room. That's a great, you know, scary scene. That birthday party scene that Joaquin watches on television with it, you know, where it's walking, they're like down that alley and it just walks past the alley. You know, that's another creepy scene. So the aliens are really good in this movie.
Totally agree. I don't really have much more to say than that, except when Jared and I saw Nope, and I think I mentioned this in our Nope review, but to me, nothing beats Signs as far as like the scariness of the aliens. Like, I really think, I don't know what aliens look like. I do believe there could be extraterrestrial life up there, but I, in my mind, that's the closest we've ever come to actually identifying like this is what they look like. And they're just creepy. They're just scary looking. It almost has like scaly skin, these long nails and skinny long fingers. It's just very, very creepy.
So another like is, this is a pretty easy plot to follow. It's not very complicated at all, and it's we didn't look up its budget. I'm gonna try to see if I can find its budget, but
thank you.
You know, it's not a very expensive movie, I don't think. Let's see if the budget will pop
it
up.
It just seemed to me like it doesn't at all seem like a low budget film, but when I was watching it, I thought, I bet with these, there's not intricate costumes, there's not a lot of costume changes, there's not a lot of locations. Like, I don't think, other than the aliens and stuff, that this would have cost a lot of money to make.
So the budget for this movie is $72 million, which is like more than lot. I thought. Now, that's $25 million of that went to Mel Gibson. So so this movie really cost about $50 million when you take out his salary for the film. So he got paid $25 million for this.
Sorry, I have to pick my jaw off the floor. BRB. Wow. Well, I think I have a lot of like just quick thoughts, but it goes with, I think that the film, things that I liked that are just short things, I thought it was a good length of a film. I think it's long enough that there's definitely a well thought out story with detailed, thoughtful characters. And then I think the pacing is really good. Like, just when it kind of slows down and they give you like an emotional scene, they pick it back up with like a jump scare or a threat. Somebody's life is threatened or something. And then Joaquin comes in with some kind of funny line or whatever. And I just think the plot is easy enough to follow. It's, you know, if you want to look up things like crop circles and are they real and where did they start and all this stuff, sure, you can get deep in the weeds there. But as far as just like a plot goes, this wasn't a difficult one, but I don't mean that as a slight. I think it was an easier movie to follow, which made it good.
Yeah. And I think my final like for this movie is, we kind of just, you know, are wrapping up all of those things that you've kind of mentioned, like, you know, it's a good story, it's paced well, all of that kind of stuff. Obviously, there's a lot of movies that draw inspiration from this movie. I think of, you know, Nope that just came out. I think of A Quiet Place, which obviously has the same like family vibe going on that this does. There's numerous other movies as well. But those are two that came to mind that I think really draw a lot of inspiration from Signs. And that kind of led the way for the rest of those films going forward.
Excellent. So I have a couple things. I think this is an incredibly rewatchable film. And if anybody has listened to this podcast for even like five episodes, you know that that carries a lot of weight with me. I don't typically feel as jazzed about a movie that you can only see once. And I specifically want to mention that about this because M. Night Shyamalan is known for like really good scary films, but things like A Sixth Sense, once you know the trick, once you know the thing about it, it's not, you know, there's no surprise anymore. You know the story. And I feel like Signs is a movie that had so much heart and so much like these characters that were so well thought out that you can get something from it every time and watch it every time and learn something new or catch a new line. And it's insanely rewatchable. I also kind of mentioned it is my favorite, I should say that, of the M. Night Shyamalan movies. But I should also tell you, to be fair, I haven't even seen all of them. So I don't know like how much anybody cares about the statement I made. And then just the last thing, I kind of alluded to this, but I love the storyline, how everybody's story ties together. So we learn like the daughter leaves water glasses out all over the house. That becomes important. Meryl was a professional baseball player. That becomes important. Rory Culkin's character, he's Morgan. Morgan's character like has asthma. That becomes important. Everything that we learn about these characters, none of it is like a throwaway thing. It all ties together well. And I think very few movies do that. A lot of them, they give you information that you don't need. We never come back to it. Or you meet a character that we never see again. And you think, well, what was the point of that? And this movie did a great job tying up all loose ends and making sure it all tied up well together. So great job by M. Night Shyamalan.
Okay, I guess we'll move on to our dislikes now. First dislike is Mel Gibson is obviously extremely problematic now in current day to 2022. The fact that he got paid, I didn't know he got paid $25 million for this movie.
$25 million?
7 minutes ago.
That's insane.
I mean, that was 35% of the budget. 35% of the budget went to Mel Gibson. So That's a little outrageous. Wow. This movie's not even that long. It's like an hour and a half. And He's, you know, he got paid. It took 45 days to shoot, it says. So he got paid, you know, basically almost $1 million a day to make this movie. So.
And Mel, to me, is a problem. If people don't know, I won't. Again, I'm not here to like, I don't know this man intimately. I can't cite every like source material where I've read this, but he has said anti-Semitic things. He said a lot of problematic things about groups of people, very, very bigoted, borderline racist, like just problems. And even if it's not race, even if it's not like, I don't like a certain race of people, he has definitely said, I don't like a group of people and religious comments, which I think is the opposite of what religion should do. It's supposed to bring people together, not pull them apart. But he's just a douche. And I don't like him. And I think my biggest problem with him is he has shown no remorse for anything. Like nothing. Like I've never heard him apologize. I've never heard him, even a publicist, come out and say he didn't mean it that way. He just like is like, lets it ride. Like, yeah, I said those things and I feel that way. And then to do a movie, Passion of the Christ, where I'm just like, I don't understand.
Forgot about that.
So so I just am not, I am definitely not a Mel Gibson fan. Now, I don't have as many issues with him. Like Kevin Spacey, I still can't watch a movie of his. Mel, I've definitely rewatched like Lethal Weapon and a couple other things. And I do think he's a talented actor, but he's a problem for me. And he's enough of a problem for me that I can't not think about it when I'm watching him in a film.
Yeah. So another dislike for me is one of your likes was that it was a good pace. I think it's a little slow at times. I think the story could go a little faster in certain parts. It's nice that it is a simple story, but I think sometimes that maybe hurts it a little bit. Just because there's a lot of time where they're just kind of waiting for the aliens to show up. And I understand why they didn't want to, you know, have that interaction until the end of the movie. That's like the climax of the movie when they finally encounter an alien. But I think of like Nope and just how there's a few points in that movie where things happen along the way that kind of build some tension and create some, you know, situations. And in this movie, it doesn't really have that until that final encounter, really. They're just preparing the rest of the time for this to happen. So, and then another dislike we had is that this probably wouldn't have solved the problem. They killed one alien.
Yes.
I feel like that's not going to take out all the whole, you know, alien invasion that's happening all across the world. So
that's my biggest bone to pick with this movie, because I don't like, okay, responding to what you just said, though, about the pacing.
Yeah.
Real quick. I don't like when a movie makes me feel dumb or like I'm left with more questions than answers. And I feel like, nope, I had a lot of questions at the end. It was just so well done that I was like, yes, I'm going to rank this highly. But this movie, I felt like I don't have many questions at all. But to tie it into the other thing we're talking to, I feel like my biggest question is, so all the aliens in this invasion went away because one was killed in this farmhouse in the middle of nowhere, Pennsylvania. So that just seems very weird to me. And then my other question I had about it was why, I don't know why they were intimidated by the aliens in the first place. Like, I don't know that the aliens, this might have been mentioned. I kind of vaguely remember that they might have said they were getting hostile. I remember that word being thrown around, but I don't know that at the beginning, if I saw crop circles, that I'd be like, I feel threatened. I think I would just be like, well, this is peculiar. Maybe we should figure out why this is happening. So I just feel like the whole concept of the aliens is believable that there would be aliens. But to me, it's weird that they just go away after one is killed. And there's really no explanation other than that. There's like a news story, but they don't really explain why they went away. They just say they went away.
Yeah. And I think, too, I think like the crop circles thing, too, that I feel like could be misleading if you're watching this movie, because that is on all the poster. I mean, I remember the poster for this movie is iconic. It's just like those three crop circles that you see in the movie. But those don't really play a huge part once you actually get into the movie. So I feel like that was done more for a mark, which is smart on M. Night Shyamalan's part to use that as like a marketing element. Yeah. Yep. So
I liked that because crop circles are a thing that like has actually happened. And that and when they were talking about boards and stuff, how you can bend stalks using boards and ropes and stuff, that's true. So I was like, well, that I can see why he did that. I thought that was clever.
Another dislike I had is I really don't like M. Night Shyamalan's cameo in this movie. I feel like so his cameo is the, you know, the person that was driving the car that killed Mel Gibson's wife. Right. I feel like that's such a important emotional scene that it needs to be somebody other than M. Night Shyamalan. So you don't go, oh, there's M. Night Shyamalan while you're watching this, you know, that's supposed to be a dramatic emotional scene between Mel Gibson and that character. And I feel like it being played by M. Night Shyamalan kind of takes you out of that a little bit. Whereas if it had just been another actor or somebody that maybe wasn't like maybe a, you know, somebody that's not super well known, that's just in that role, it might go across a little bit better. Because I think, you know, if you know that M. Night Shyamalan is in all his movies, you're looking for when he's going to pop up. And I just felt with that cameo, I wouldn't have, if I was him, I would not have picked that character to be my cameo, like the one I played. Yeah.
I feel conflicted about that because I don't think M. Night Shyamalan's the best actor in the world.
Yeah.
But I also think about the time this came out, how many movies he had out. And really, I think like Sixth Sense was like his only big one so far, right?
That and Unbreakable, I think, had come out.
Oh, Unbreakable. Because I think at that age, at least, I probably wouldn't have even noticed that was M. Night Shyamalan. And I don't think he would have had the recognition that he has now. So I don't, that didn't bother me very much. I just don't think he's the best actor. And I do agree with you, Jared, that that's a really important character. But at the same time, that just didn't really, that didn't bother me because I just kind of, I don't know who else would have played that at the time. And I wouldn't have known him from Adam at that time, at least.
Do you have any other dislikes before we move on to our scores?
No, I feel like that's good. Just okay. As long as people know how I feel about Mel Gibson.
Yeah.
And I would say it to his face. So
I'm going to give this movie, I think, a, you know what? I'm going to just go a 75, you know, kind of right where the critics are. I don't love it. It's not my favorite. I think in terms of M. Night Shyamalan movies, I think I like The Sixth Sense more. Now, I think this one, like you said, Katie, is more rewatchable because once you know the, you know, twist in The Sixth Sense, it doesn't become as rewatchable because you know what's going to happen. Whereas this has some more set pieces and things that do make it a little more rewatchable. So I like that aspect of it. But I think The Sixth Sense is a better movie than this. So I'm going to give Signs a 75.
That's awesome. Okay. I think that's completely fair. I am super nostalgic about this movie. I just remember how I felt when I was watching it as a kid. I think it's insanely rewatchable. I think I liked it just as much watching it now as I did when I was a kid. So I really do think highly of it. I have a few issues with like just questions I have at the end, but I'm giving it an 85.
Okay.
It was really good. I don't think I'm going to regret that score. I actually think that's a pretty fair score. I definitely liked it better than the audience did. I think overall it's really good. And when I think of 20 years ago, the kind of movies that were coming out and stuff, like this to me was a much higher caliber movie. Now, if we put it toe-to-toe with something today, I would probably expect better CGI and stuff. But, like, I thought this was a great movie.
Yeah, if I would have been old enough to go see this movie in 2002, which I was 9, so probably a little too young for this. And if you look at the movies that came out in 2002, which weren't a ton of notable releases, I think this is one that I would definitely have been excited to go see if I had been old enough to see it. Like I would have been like, this would have been an anticipated movie for me. Just knowing the concept and kind of the plot, and just because it's unique from other stuff that gets made. So, okay, well, that's our thoughts on Signs, and you can follow the show on social media at Podcast Silver on Twitter and Instagram, and also you can search the show on Facebook, find the Silver Screen Podcast. You can see our Letterboxd profiles in the description of the show notes. You can follow us on Letterboxd. Be sure to rate and review wherever you listen to the show. That really helps us out. And on the next episode of the show, we will be doing a review of Midnight in Paris, and we're going to have a special guest as well.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited, Jared. We're going to have my friend Mandy Shannon on the show. She is a big fan of the podcast. I thought she was going to pass out when I asked her if she wanted to be on, because she really is a big fan. And we've done a lot of plays and stuff together. She is so ready, and we both are obsessed with the movie Midnight in Paris. I can't wait to talk about it.
So that'll be our next episode of the show, talking about Midnight in Paris.
Until next time, we'd like to thank the Academy.